Hello and welcome to Outside In. My name's John Burns and this is my podcast for outdoor folk. I grew up on Merseyside in England, and that's where I began my walking. And I can remember vividly, it felt like everywhere you turned, you know, there were signs, private, keep out, no trespassers. You felt about as welcome as a rattlesnake in a lucky dip, you know. And so when I moved to Scotland many years later, it was a revelation to find that I could wander almost at will in the fantastic countryside we have here. So the access rights that we have in Scotland are the envy of a lot of folk. Certainly our English neighbours look at them with a longing. But I'm very conscious that, and I heard recently that it's quite incredible that struggles are still going on to preserve those access rights. And there's a particular conflict or disagreement, if you like, at the moment over some access rights. And I thought it would be a great thing to bring on the show. So I've invited along Brendan Paddy, who is a director at Ramblers Scotland. And I'm going to ask him what's going on at the moment. Hi, Brendan. How are you?
Hey, John. Very good. Thank you.
Great. I think maybe before we talk about the specific case that Ramblers is involved in, as I say, you know, we have fantastic access legislation here in Scotland. That came in, I think, in 2003. But it wasn't always like that, was it?
No, and I think the interesting thing about the 2003 Act is if you talk to a lot of hill walkers who've been at this for quite some time, certainly longer than I have, they will tell you that that Act didn't, in their view, create new rights. What it did is put into law rights that they believed were already implicitly theirs. And so, and that's a view that's kicked back and forward and disputed by some. The more legally minded tend to say, well, you know, these assumed rights, these cultural and asserted rights that you talk about perhaps weren't as rock solid as you would like to think. They certainly weren't explicit in law before 2003. But I think if you do talk to people who walked before 2003, yes, some will say, oh, I never knew where I could go. It's such a relief to have the Land Reform Act, so I know I'm allowed to go so long as I'm sensible, more or less where I like. But others will say to you, look, I walk the hills when and where I chose. And if anyone gave me a hard time, I gave as good as I got. And I always did that in the full confidence I had every right to be there. And certainly there isn't a lot of history in Scotland of people being prosecuted for trespass, for example, simply for crossing a farmer's land to get to the hills. And in many cases, that was, you know, certainly tolerated, if not actually welcomed, well before 2003.
But what 2003 did then was it's not exactly set that in tablets of stone, but it made it very explicit that actually, like, for example, I'm fully entitled to take my little tent and set it up beside a lock in the hills and camp there. And really no one has the right to come along and tell me I shouldn't be there.
That's right. I mean, it took a bunch of assumptions and precedents and asserted rights and said, okay, we're going to put this into law, and that means it needs to be fairly explicit and in black and white. And as you rightly say, it isn't just the right to walk more or less anywhere in Scotland. Mm-hmm. It's the right to ride, whether on a horse or on a bicycle. It's the right to camp. Yeah. You know, you have to take your kayak, you know, which previously could have been very difficult to access some waterways. So, you know, so long as you behave responsibly, you have very broad rights to access almost any land in Scotland. There are a few exceptions, you know, around MOD land, around land, obviously, where it's residential and, you know, you can't be in a particular place without seeing into somebody's front room.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things are, I think, rightly and reasonably beyond the law. But there are also a few areas which are Potentially places where people would argue the toss. And I think the one that we'll come to shortly is around what happens if you have a space which is used for work, whether that be farming or fishing or forestry, and how is that treated? And there's often been a little bit of friction around some of those spaces. And I think what I would say about the law is it is clear, it is strong. Yes, there might be cases on the boundary that you might get into disagreements with folk about, but the one thing that we can tell you for certain is that the mechanisms for enforcing the law, should your rights of access be blocked by a landowner who doesn't want to play the game, they're relatively limited. You are mostly dependent on the access authority, usually the local authority, sometimes the national park if you're in one, to take action. And they are pretty reluctant, I think. Not entirely understandably, and not entirely for reasons that are not entirely incomprehensible, to get involved in potentially expensive legal cases against landowners who might be deep-pocketed and quite belligerent.
I mean, I've been walking in these hills for a long time, and I do see a considerable change in the attitude of landowners generally. They are far, I would say, less hostile to walkers than some used to be, and it wasn't a small minority. It was. I can recall years and years ago when I think it was NatWest brought into play a little access booklet that you could ring up estates during the stalking season to ask if it was okay to walk in certain areas. And I remember picking up that book one stalking season, and every estate I phoned told me that I couldn't possibly walk on their land. No, I think that we have come a long, long way for that. But as you say, there are certain, certain people don't always take that so sympathetically. So tell us about the particular issue that's led Ramblers to become involved and to take up its campaigning role.
Right. So the particular case that we're now talking about, having talked previously in more general terms, is to do with the Ardnamurchan estate. So that's on the Ardnamurchan Peninsula, unsurprisingly. And the particular issue that arises is around Glenmorangdale. Now, there's an old historic track there that's been on maps going back at least 100 years. It's believed to have been a former drove road, although not one of the main drove roads. And it's well used to this day by locals and visitors alike. And if you know Ardnamurchan a little, you know it's pretty rugged, rough country. So even if you are not shy about just bashing off through the heather or up a ridge line, you might find things slightly harder going than you're used to or prepared for on Ardnamurchan, and you might choose to stick to the path in those
Yeah,
cases.
I did have a look at the map that you've got a link to on your website, which showed the particular area. This is essentially, well, I'll let you describe exactly where it is, but I think the particular difficulty of this area is that actually what the point that's in dispute is actually quite a significant sort of access point to quite a large area of country. It's not just a little track across a small area. It actually, if you couldn't get past that, as you say, the rest of the ground's likely to be very difficult to pass. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that is right. So really, the landowner is fond of pointing out that the area that he is seeking to have the court declare is not subject to access rights, is a relatively small area. It's a woodyard. I think the difficulty and the thing that doesn't really capture is it's a woodyard that's been built over an existing path, which completely blocks that path, and thereby prevents access on this old drove road between two of the local centres, and also further up into some of the hills, the higher hills north of Glenmorangdale. So although he has said that there are a number of alternative routes, I think if you look at those routes, you'll find that they're not on his land, they're on neighbouring land. And I would add to that that some of those routes are pathless, precipitously steep and on land that is heavily vegetated. So the idea that there are short detours you can take to easily bypass this woodyard, I just don't think is correct. And the obvious solution in some ways, you might argue, would be if the landowner were willing to propose a short diversion around the periphery of the woodyard. But to the best of our knowledge, that isn't something that he's so far offered.
Right, that's something I've come across in quite a few places where access has been, well, it's perhaps been a little intrusive going past someone's house or their farm or whatever, and they do construct a little bypass route that actually is, I think that's perfectly reasonable. But it can just go back a little bit. This issue arose in about 2019 with two ramblers, is that correct?
So this route is popular. It has been used for many years. There's been people taking access along this route and also, as I say, up into the hills but beyond Glenboroughdale. But the new owners of the estate had since the new owners of the estate took over, there had been some issues with access. And for us, this really came into sharp focus into a bit of a crunch when two of our members, elderly people, were walking peacefully along this path in the vicinity of the woodyard. And they were challenged by estate workers. And that led to a charge, that led to a report being made by the police to the Procurator Fiscal that, that they had been potentially. They were potentially
Taking part in aggravated trespasses.
aggravated trespass. Yes, I don't want to say charge because they were not charged.
No,
So
not no,
they
in
were referred
Scotland.
to the Procurator Fiscal.
Can you tell me a little bit what actually is aggravated trespass?
Well, this is an odd thing. It's one of those laws which has hardly ever been used. It was sort of the product of a little bit of a moral panic. It was brought in by earlier governments when they were very concerned about illegal raves and, hunt sabs. And
Oh,
so
see, I see.
it's really difficult to imagine a case more different
Yeah,
from that. And at
yeah.
the time the law was created, the government was very, very clear that it was absolutely not intended to stop people walking. So the idea that it would be used against two people exercising their access rights, we found astounding and unprecedented. And we were extremely concerned about it and said so at the time. And we were very pleased when the Procurator Fiscal decided to take no further.
Yes, because in Scotland you can, I suppose you can report anyone to the Procurator Fiscal. It's the Procurator Fiscal then to decide whether it's in the public interest to take any action or indeed whether an offence may or may not have been committed at all. So obviously the fiscal obviously decided it came down very heavily in that case. Is that what happened?
It is, but I think it's worth bearing in mind that, they were interviewed by the police. The police were the ones who referred the case to the Procurator Fiscal, and
Right.
they had to wait over a year before they
Oh,
heard
right,
that
okay.
there would be no further action taken at this time. So none of that is something that you want when you're
No.
walking in your local area and exercising, as you see it, your legal rights.
I saw somewhere I think you talk about are some gates locked? Is that right?
Yeah, so one of the things about this case, which I think gives us some hope, is there have been quite a long-standing run of issues
Right.
which both the local authority and indeed the local community have been quite concerned about. So in a sense, the Ramblers have come to this somewhat later in the piece,
I
and I think
see. I
we're
see.
doing so in support of local people who happen to include some of our members, and also, people who might visit the area further afield, Ramblers members or not. So yes, there do seem to have been quite a few incidents of gates being locked. Sometimes those gates are on deer fences, and
Right.
obviously, if you lock a gate on a deer fence, getting round that, even if you
Is
are
difficult.
able-bodied, is no trivial thing. And obviously, if you do have some mobility issues, if you are a little older, less stable in your feet, and goodness help you if you happen to have a mountain bike.
Yes.
That can be really difficult because if a gate is locked and you expect it to be open, you're up in the hills in winter and the dark is closing in, and you're forced to retrace your step in a very remote and rugged area, that could have potentially very serious consequences.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I remember on one occasion a very cheerful Land Rover owner driver actually locking me in somewhere,
Lovely.
which I thought was very good. At another estate where I think access is discouraged at times, you know. Okay, well, I do. I don't know where the law stands over this. I mean, I recently, not that long ago, I was walking the hills in near Inverness, and I came across it was a locked gate. And it was a sort of 5-bar gate, the sort of thing it would normally be pretty easy to climb over. Although for reasons, and then this was an estate which had signs up saying, you know, we welcome walkers. And the gates were locked, and the bottom half of the gate was covered in a sort of a grid, which made it very, very difficult to get over. And I just wondered, would that be an issue at all, do you think? Or,
Yeah, I think
well.
generally most people would recognise that it is. So there is a duty on landowners to facilitate access. And what
Ah,
that means,
right.
and so so what that means is that not only do people have a right to be on your land, you can't make it impossible for them to effectively to be there. So, you know, if you were to put up miles and miles of deer fence over that gate, you could potentially find yourself in court with the local authority or indeed the Ramblers saying, hang on a minute, you're not fulfilling your legal duty to facilitate access. And in exactly the same way, if you have gates on your estate and they are being locked and preventing access in that way, that's also something that could lead to you finding yourself in court, being faced with people telling you that you're not upholding your legal obligations.
Right,
So
right.
and those things have gone to court. So, for example, you know, the National Park, Loch Lomond and Trossachs, at a place called Drumleen, over that in that part of the country, did actually have a landowner who was saying, well, you know, I've got wild animals on this land, I've got wild boars, and you know, it's not safe for people to be on the land, so I have to keep it completely locked off, and you know, there can be no access. And I think you quite quickly get to a position where you could see how very large areas of land could be made completely inaccessible quite easily. And you're back to the days where people just slapped up a sign saying, caution, bull in the field, and you know, that was it, job done, no more ramblers, thank you very much.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I think also, well, the signage is quite an important issue, actually. I mean, I've certainly come across signs that, how should I put it? They talk about shooting, but shooting constantly taking place, and sort of with the implication that if you would wander through this gate and up this hill, the likelihood is you'll be shot. That too is not really on, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So, and look, I would stress we are talking about outliers here. You know, this is not the
Yes.
majority of
No,
landowners,
absolutely not. No.
not the majority of farmers, and not the majority even of shooting estates.
No.
So there are many estates where they will, as we were discussing earlier, if there is a legitimate reason for health and safety, perhaps why actually crossing a particular piece of land might not be advisable, or why they don't want you using what may be an historic right of way, but which passes very close to the house, they'll simply put in a permanent or temporary diversion. And so
Yes.
long as that's a reasonable diversion, so long as it's
Yeah.
short and it's in decent condition, then I think most of us would be very sympathetic to that.
I think that's right.
And I think there's very few people who would say, no, I've always walked past your front window and had a gawp as I went past. That's not why we're there. We're
No.
not there to disrupt people's lives or to make their lives difficult. So I think, you know, you can easily see the same with shooting estates. There are shooting estates that are excellent
Yeah.
when you ring them up and will be really specific
Yeah.
about when they're shooting and where they're shooting.
Yes.
And so no shooting estate should ever say to you, you can't come this weekend because they're shooting. Because, you know, it's almost never the case that the shooting will be taking part in all of the estate at all hours across a whole week. I mean, apart from
No.
anything else, it's much rarer to find shooting on a Sunday. So it should be possible on almost any estate to take access, even if there is some shooting going on. And the estates which say, well, you really shouldn't come between autumn and spring, are really taking the piss, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. And they're pretty rare these days. I mean, I certainly can recall days when on a Sunday you'd be pursued along a track by a Land Rover, you know, if you went anywhere, and it was a sort of cat and mouse game as to whether the gillies could find where you'd park your car and that sort of stuff, you know. But we're a long, long way past those days, and I think we've obviously talked about the law because obviously you're involved in a legal issue. But the truth is, I guess that the vast majority of access issues and problems are actually resolved reasonably by discussion. Is that something that happens a lot?
Yeah, so I think that's exactly right. And that's how we'd want to see all these questions resolved. So if there is a genuine, legitimate concern about the impact of access in a given area, then we would always be delighted to talk to a landowner about that and the local authority too, because, you know, as I've already said, they are very reluctant to have to go to court. They do it as absolutely a last resort. And so as a result of that, I think you will find them always very open to having conversations about sensible precautions and diversions. And, you know, warning signs can be good or bad. If there's a genuine risk, if there are, for example, active forestry activities taking place now, I would 100% want to know that and to avoid that area. If, on the other hand, someone puts up a sign saying forestry operations in progress and leaves it up for 2 years.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And you do see that.
You do.
Then that's a little different.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to be devil's advocate for a moment, you know, we're talking about one path here, aren't we, really, that you've been involved in? And did you really think that what do you think the sort of wider issues would be? I mean, if that one path is lost to us, well, there are others, let's be fair. So why does Ramblers feel it's so important to defend this particular situation?
So I think we've got a particular situation here, which is important in its own right. So this is an established route. It's claimed as a right of way. It's on the maps going back over 100 years. It's well used and well loved by locals and visitors alike. It does give access also up into the hills. So it is important in its own right, but there is also this broader principle, which is if we allow landowners to decide when and where the law applies, and there is no recourse to dispute that, whether by the local authority or by indeed people who enjoy the outdoors, then you can quite quickly see a situation where the land rights that we fought so hard for, and the Ramblers were very much at the forefront of that fight to get the 2003 access legislation not just passed, but passed in a way that meant it was as strong as it could reasonably be and was accompanied by a good set of guidelines, the Scottish Outdoor Access Code, that explains in plain English to everyone how it is supposed to work. If we allow that, then you can easily imagine a situation where those rights are gradually eroded over time. And we go from one or two landowners who have an inclination to perhaps push boundaries to any landowner who feels that they might be mildly inconvenienced, feels entirely comfortable and like there will be no pushback if they decide to shut a path.
So I suppose it sounds to me that this is a sort of line in the sand, really.
It is for us. I think it's really important that where our access rights are challenged and where we believe they're being challenged in a way that's outside the law, that we do seek to uphold those rights. The difficulty for us as the Ramblers, and indeed for local authorities, is that process is uncertain and expensive. So when you go to the Sheriff's Court, these are not cases that the sheriff will have heard often before in most cases.
Yeah.
You know, these cases are exceedingly rare, thankfully, and mostly because most landowners, I think, are very pragmatic and sensible about these things.
Yeah.
But also because local authorities are extremely reluctant to go to court, even if they think they've got a good case, because of the time and money involved.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that we are going to court for the first time in more than 10 years shows how important we think it is that we do say, hang on, no, actually, we don't believe that's in line with the Land Reform Scotland Act 2003. We think there's a really important principle here that we need to defend, as well as protecting this particular route.
So, I mean, you're basically, I don't want to understand it, you're asking the walking community to give you some support, really, as well, in trying to raise funds for what is going to be a pretty expensive process, well, if you have to go all the way.
That's right. So even at the Sheriff's Court, if we were to be unsuccessful, our solicitor has estimated that we could be looking at costs in excess of £80,000.
Right.
Now, fighting these kinds of things is one of the things the Ramblers do, but we don't have that kind of money just lying about.
No.
So the funds we do have are already committed to other projects by and large or needed for other things. So what we are doing is asking those who share our view of the importance of Scotland's access rights, who enjoy and think it's wonderful that we have these extraordinary rights of access, so long as we behave responsibly, to support us in protecting not just access at Glenmore, but defending the broader principle that these rights just some can't simply be brushed aside.
Right, so you're obviously needing to try and raise some funds to try and finance what sounds to me like a really important principle to defend. We have to stand up, unfortunately, on certain occasions to defend these sort of principles. And so I'll put a link on the on my website on the podcast page to where folk can make a small donation if they wish towards to support the what I think is very important work. I will certainly be watching developments here with interest, as will I'm sure a lot of the walking and outdoor community that really depends so much on these access rights to enjoy the pursuits that are really, really important to us. So Brendan, thanks very much for coming on the show, and I wish you every success with your campaign.
Thank you,
And thanks very much to Brendan for coming along and telling us about the campaign in support of all our rights to use the country, really. Yeah, I hear about some incredible things. I did. There's an estate in Derbyshire, I heard, and they're sending their gillies out. I suppose they're gamekeepers in England, aren't they? In the middle of the night, with heat-seeking cameras to detect anybody wild camping, like at 3 a.m., you know, and waking them up and turfing them off. Now, I wrote in my novel Skydance, Lord Purdy was the obnoxious landowner in that book. Even Lord Purdy probably wouldn't have done that. But then it is in reality, you know. Anyway, thanks very much for listening. Just to point out, well, this is probably the least subtle hint ever dropped, really. Yeah, Christmas is coming, and I've got some rather nice books obtainable through those lovely people at Vertebrate Press. So if you're looking for an incredibly cheap, they basically give them away, really. Incredibly cheap from Vertebrate. I do hope you've enjoyed this. And there's a link, obviously, to support Ramblers on the page of the podcast. Thanks very much for listening. Do come again. Bye bye.